Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the honourable captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kick. The super sub has done it again. And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To get a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today myself, Jay and Buster, will look back on the 2-0 Scottish Cup final defeat to Celtic. We'll review the 2017-18 season. We'll look ahead to the summer months and what may be of that for Motherwell Football Club. And we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
How do you?
Jay, I'll start with yourself as always. And we've had 2 weeks to reflect and the Scottish Cup final, a fantastic run to the final. The excitement and the build-up was incredible. The day itself, until 3 o'clock, I suppose, was a very good day as well. On to the game, the team didn't really perform anywhere near the levels they showed they could over the course of the season in that first half. Found themselves 2-0 down and unfortunately weren't able to recover from there.
Yeah, that's it. I think firstly, you know, the match is obviously the most important part of it, but the cup final for us compared to Celtic was that whole, you know, week or 2 weeks prior to it. And then even afterwards, you know, going out afterwards and stuff like that. But yeah, the most important part was the 90 minutes. And to be fair, the most important part was probably those first 20, 25 minutes where it's always difficult to really know exactly in these situations whether we've, you know, not got going or frozen, or whether Celtic have just really turned it on early doors and not let us get near them. But I think the overall feeling from Motherwell fans, from the players and from Stephen Robinson was that we just didn't do what we'd, you know, set up to do, what we'd planned to do those first 20, 25 minutes. And then, of course, the second half, when we looked much brighter, we were creating a few more chances. Biggie hits the bar. Gordon pulls off a good save from Main. At that stage, you're hoping you can maybe get a goal just to get back into it. But realistically, you know, 2-0 down in a cup final to a team like Celtic, the tie's almost dead. So, you know, given all the build-up, all the excitement, you know, everybody at the club, players, management, you know, everybody was saying the right things that really gave us a sense of belief. And then it was just those first 20, 25 minutes. We just didn't get going, or Celtic didn't allow us to get going. And when Celtic go 2-0 up, it's going to be really, really difficult to get back into it. That said, you know, I think lesser teams would have crumbled at that stage. Certainly there are many, many previous Motherwell teams I can think of that in a cup final 2-0 down, or in any game against Celtic 2-0 down, would have lost that game 5 or 6-0. So to actually finish the game possibly the strongest of the two sides, I think is something to be proud about. And we can be, you know, very proud of the run itself, of the season itself, and of the way the team conducted themselves on and off the park on the day. It's just unfortunate those 20 or 25 minutes at the start of the game ultimately killed us.
Buster, Jay mentioned that many Motherwell teams would have maybe rolled over and went on to lose that game very heavily. Stephen Robinson instead opting for a 4-3-3 in the second half, going at Celtic, really running the risk of leaving ourselves quite badly exposed and culpable to losing 2 or 3 more goals in that second half. Instead, I thought we did well to, albeit Celtic were pretty standoffish. We were able to go in the front foot, control the game. Didn't manage to get the goal that would have maybe turned it back towards us. But again, a real demonstration by the manager that he's got a belief in his squad and his players.
Well, don't get me wrong, it was obviously a brave move if you want, but I think it was his only move, to be fair. It's not as if, if that was a league fixture and we were struggling at the bottom of the league, there's always a fear of, losing an extra couple of goals, where your goal difference matters. But
I just 2-0. Think in previous times, though, that managers, for instance, McCall or McGee would have just thought 2-0, let's try and save face here and just shut up shop instead.
In a national final,
continue to win it. Yeah, I don't think for a second that at 2-0 down, Mark McGee would have ran the risk of losing 6 or 7.
Well, again, it's a hypothetical situation anyway. But I'm not saying nothing bad about Steve Robinson in any way, or try to take away from Steve Robinson in any way here. I'm just saying that it was his only option, in my opinion. We did do really well, I thought, as well, but. As Jay says, the first half killed it, really. I think, to be fair, Celtic only had 3 shots, 2 of them, right in the corner. The other one, it was probably the easiest chance, and they should have scored that. But I think, if they shots had went slightly wide or went over the bar or whatever, we'd be in that second half feeling kind of confident. The first half was a complete non-event. Celtic controlled it, obviously, but nothing really happened. I think we'd one shot, say, like 3, 2 of them went into goals, and that just killed the game completely. But that's how it is. I don't think MD went in there 100% confident that we were going to go and win the cup, but everybody always goes there with that wee feeling that it could be our day. But Celtic are they're the best team in the country by a mile, and it shows in the results in every competition you've played in the last 24 months. But as Jay says, it was a great effort of the season in general. 2 cup finals, and the only thing you could ask is that we maybe snuck one of them, but it's not to be.
That's it, Jay. I suppose the frustrating and disappointing element of all of this is you get to 2 cup finals, but we're sitting here and all we've got to show for the season is 2 runners-up medals and a 7th place finish in the league. It's almost impossible to be negative about the season that's went by, but the bigger picture, I guess, is we didn't manage to win anything.
Yeah, obviously, it would be, there's not a Motherwell fan on the planet who wouldn't, pretty much be out for weeks on end if we actually won a trophy after, 27 years. And obviously that would be a phenomenal achievement. But I think I think there are certain clubs that obviously count their success on paper, dates next to trophies. We know who they are, they make such a big deal about it. Celtic go on and on about 10 in a row. Rangers fans are daft on 55 or whatever the hell that is. Whereas for fans like ourselves, for clubs like ourselves, I think it's more about the experience. It's more about the going week to week. I still maintain that one of my favourite seasons ever was, the Faddy, Pearson, Hamill season when we finished bottom and yet pumped every team in the top 6. We didn't win anything that year. In fact, we were very, very close to relegation. So I think it all just depends on what your values are as a football fan. If you see a successful season as, a year next to a trophy name, on the first page of the programme, then fair enough. But for me, that was a successful season. At the end of the day, we're a fan-owned club with limited resources. And if someone had said to any Motherwell fan at the start of the season, you'll finish 7th and get to 2 cup finals, there is not a Motherwell fan, even the really, really blinkered negative handful of fans on social media and on the likes of Steam One Online, who have almost became parodies of themselves, I think they would, in a quiet, honest moment, would confirm that they would snap your hand off for that. So yes, for me, winning a trophy would have been, a ridiculous bonus. But it's still a successful season for me.
And the real challenge ahead, Buster, for Stephen Robinson is to somehow build in this. The season itself, we'll look at it in a bit more detail later on, but you're finishing the season on a somewhat negative note, despite it being such a fantastic occasion and such a fantastic achievement to get to the cup final. You look back at the season, the great run in the Betfred, the league campaign fairly solid as well. It's a real challenge for a club like Motherwell to maintain these levels.
It will be very difficult for us to... Well, you know, there is maybe only one other way you can better this season, and it's by winning something. So that's how difficult... That just sort of shows how difficult it would be to get better, to have a better season next year, I suppose. But the league, again, as you say, we'll go into the season in general a bit later, but the league form at points was incredibly awful. Obviously maybe circumstances played their part, but I think if we were a bit more solid in certain points in the season, we'd have to clinch that top six. And as Jay quite rightly said, looking back at the last couple of seasons, if you'd said to anybody, this is what we'll do this year, you need out, you'd have taken that. So next year, if we can move up, maybe in one position, finish sixth, and again, just a bit of, we don't have to get to two finals again. It would be ideal if we do, obviously, but as long as we don't get pumped out of some of the lower league teams in the early rounds, that'll do me again.
And does this bring us back to being a cup team? I know we had 4 or 5 years of real disappointments in the cup, but have we now rediscovered our place in Scottish football as a cup side after what, something like 14 cup ties, and we only lost at the final stage in both of them?
I think you would like to think so, because again, if you're going to be completely honest, at the moment there's no chance in hell that, I don't think anybody's got to win the league except for Celtic over the next couple of years, unless Aberdeen and Hibs pull their socks up. But you'd like to think that we would be a cup team. But again, I've always said that about the cups. When you look at maybe Inverness and teams like that winning the cup previously, it's all you have to do is win 5 or 6 games. It's all right saying it sounds easy, but it's 5 or 6 games, that's it, and it's, you don't have to win them in a row. There's always the league to get to. If you're on a shite run, try and pull yourself back a couple of games before the cups, next round of the fixtures. I actually really enjoy the fact that, this season, for example, we were incredibly bad at one point. Then it's just, take your mind off it. Here's the cup games. The cup games essentially kept, I believe that people would have turned on Stevie Robinson quite severely if we hadn't went as well in the cups, just due to maybe December, January sort of time when we were absolutely bollocks in the league.
Well, he said that himself, didn't he, that the cup almost kind of keeps your season ticking over. It wasn't the favoured choice when it came to managerial appointment last season. If you go through a bad spell, you need something to almost supplement it or to lift the spirits, and the cups, both in the League Cup and the Scottish Cup, were both the lifts that the team needed when things weren't going so well. So I think that's absolutely spot on. Jay, the 5 or 6 days after losing the cup final, already the draw for the Betfred League Cup revealed in one of the most elongated fashions possible. Very, very long draw. Our draw threw up Queen of the South, Stranraer, Clyde and Edinburgh City. So a couple of repeat ties from the last couple of seasons there. Stranraer we went to 2 seasons ago, and then Edinburgh City only last season for what was almost an absolutely disastrous 90 minutes, it must be said. It's hard to know. We're sitting here and we don't know what the order of the fixtures are. We don't know where the fixtures will be played at the moment. But it just feels a wee bit too soon at the moment.
Well, I mean, I suppose it goes back to when you were saying earlier about, ending the season on a negative. I think if the the cup final is considered ending the season a negative, then I think it's important that you get on with moving on and preparing ahead for the new season. Because, you don't want to dwell on things. At the end of the day, you know, you've got Cadden away with the Scotland side, you've got Carson getting more caps, you've got Campbell playing for the under-20s, you've got the improvements going on at the pitch, the ticketing system, and now that, and obviously the League Cup draw, and yeah, it's a bit soon, we don't know who we're going to be playing and where, but I think it all kind of just adds up to kind of keep us ticking over. You know, the last thing, if there was, you know, real disappointment about the club after the Cup final, then the last thing you would want would be a couple of weeks of nothingness, so that, you know, everybody in and around the club is just basically thinking about that Cup final. I think it's important that you dust yourself off and you get on with it. And that's what I think things like the League Cup draw, you know, can help us do. And then the draw itself, you know, regardless, you know, again, that kind of selfish football fan part creeps in where you're looking at the fixtures more for your away days and things like that rather than any kind of, you know, advantage for your team, because I think, like any other of the top seeds in the League Cup draw, I think we should be aiming to top that group regardless of how the fixtures pan out. But no, I do think it's a bit of a disjointed way of doing it. You know, we know who we've got, but we don't know a couple of weeks later where we're playing. But I think it all, you know, it's an added ingredient just to keep things ticking over the summer, keep us focused on preparing for the new season rather than dwelling anything from last season.
I'll clarify that. I'm more meant on a negative result rather than a negative note. I don't think playing the National Cup final will ever be a negative thing for Motherwell, but...
Oh, no. Yep, I get that. I think just though when you, I mean, I tend to agree. I think, you know, I'm in agreement. I think when you look at the players pre-match in particular, the amount of belief and the amount of confidence that was kind of flowing through every single player, that's quite a high to go into that Cup final on, and to lose it, regardless of, you know, how high that odds were stacked against us, the players will have been very disappointed in that, particularly because it was that first 20 minutes. So I do think that all the things that are happening just in and around the club at the moment, even the relatively mundane things, as I said, like, you know, the pitch being dug up and stuff like that, I think it all helps because it all, you know, it instantly turns our attention to next season, and we can, you know, look back at the previous season, learn from mistakes and talk about it, but there's no dwelling going on. It's just a case of, right, move on. And you know, particularly for guys like Carson, Cadden and Campbell, who are obviously straight into international duty, I think that'll be fantastic for them because, you know, their season hasn't even finished yet. You know, they're definitely ending their season on a high.
Buster, just that last one on the Cup final, it's impossible to get away from the fact that Celtic are this almost juggernaut that have went two seasons having a clean sweep of domestic trophies. I think it's a testimony to ourselves, though, that we went into that final with so much belief. We've built a squad that the fans can really believe in. I think, as a whole, the club really, really got the emotions going. They got the enthusiasm and the passion back to quite a lot of supporters. The crowd stayed to the very end. We've seen finals in the past where people are streaming out of Hampden well before the final whistle because either the team are been that badly beaten or they don't go often enough and they just expect that they're going to go along and see a team win, which is fairly baffling, to be honest. But the fact that at the full-time whistle you could hear these Motherwell fans over the Celtic fans who were celebrating a double treble is, I think, it's testimony to the work that goes on behind the scenes at Fir Park and also the incredible work of Stephen Robinson, Keith Lasley and the players over the course of the season.
I think so, yeah. And one of the points you made there as well about the, you know, hearing us over the, you know, the Celtic fans who were apparently celebrating, that's incredibly true. It's all right saying, you know, we were in the middle of the Motherwell stand and that's why we heard ourselves, but at one point when we were doing the sort of, you know, the horns thunderclap thing where it goes silent, the full fucking stadium was silent. And it was then the Celtic fans noticed that and started to make some noise. But you're right there in that sense. But do you know what? As you say, Celtic are too good. As I said before, I don't think MD, you know, went in there with 100% belief and confidence that it was, you know, we were going to turn them over. You know, there might have been two or three people who were confident we'd sneak a win. I think everybody else was hopeful we'd sneak a win. But you know, Celtic are far too good. Far too big a budget, you know, they're making money and just sitting on it, they know, or putting it towards their directors or whatever they do with it. But as you say, it's the fact that even you know, I mean, what do we get? Maybe 3,500 people at Fir Park every week, and there was what, 12,000-13,000 there. And again, the majority of them were hanging about, get the team out. You know, appreciate the fact that we had had such a good season in the Cups. You know, stay there, give the team a, quite rightly give them, you know, their off-season around their paws. And then everybody just went their own way, whether it was back to Fir Park, back to the pubs, whatever, you know. And again, I said it to people I worked with before, when they were trying to tell me I'd be greeting when we get pumped and stuff like that. You know, it's, as a Millwall fan, you're used to losing. All right, it's a bit sore when it's a cup final, but an hour later, you know, you've got 3 pints in you and you're fine with that, and you're talking to your mates, you're discussing where and when it went wrong or what you're going to do. You forgot all about the football, you're talking about what you're doing that night. It's, you know, it's just part and parcel, but it's, in my opinion, you know, it was a great season. I doubt there'll be many seasons in the future where we'll go to Hampden, what was it, 5 times, including obviously the Queen's Park game. But I doubt there'll be many seasons in the future where we'll go to Hampden that often, barring, you know, maybe Scotland games. So, you know, I think quite rightly the fans stayed behind that wee bit. You know, we're very vocal in our encouragement for the team and their applause, basically, and you know, that's what it should be.
And soon after the cup final, the smoke had cleared, Jay, excuse me, and the usual squad update was released in terms of who will be released, who, the majority of players that were out of contract had signed new deals with the club, but Diamantis Petrovicus, we're not going to be too sad to hear the back of that name, just due to the fact that I can't say it still after all this time. Russell Griffiths, Luke Watt leaving the club. Tom Aldred as well, a player that came in on loan and did very, very well. I think he was possibly the only surprise inclusion in that list that at this point in time, Motherwell haven't managed to attract Aldred to stay in a long-term deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, first and foremost, I think the list as a whole, you're completely right. There's absolutely no surprises there. You know, when you've all the best to the guys going, but they were quite clearly surplus to requirements, and I don't think anybody will be too disappointed to see them go. In terms of Aldred, I think there's still, you know, room for manoeuvre there. I think you've got to remember that he is still a Bury player. It's all very well, you know, wanting him to stay, but it's still only, you know, it's the 2nd of June. As far as I'm aware, his loan deal was at Motherwell till the 30th of May or 31st of May. So he's went back to his parent club, which is the way of things. Now, whether over the next month or two he negotiates an out from Bury, or Bury release him, or we go in with an offer, remains to be seen. But I don't necessarily think that's the end of that. It very well may be, you know, Robinson might be quite happy to look at a back three of Dunn, Hartley and Kipre, with perhaps Maguire as backup on the bench. But, you know, Aldred obviously came in, seemed to have a fantastic time, did fabulously well, and I think if we weren't considering bringing him back, I think there'd be something wrong there. That said, you've also got to remember the kind of the markets we're dealing in now. You know, even conference teams these days are flooding their coffers with cash to try and make it into the Football League. So there will be teams in and around Bury's level who can offer him, you know, £3,000, £4,000, and possibly will be more enticed to do so after him having a successful 6 months at Motherwell. So it could just come down to money, it could come down to wages, but I certainly wouldn't take, you know, Aldred returning to his parent club as planned as, you know, the official game over in terms of him staying. I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that's perhaps, you know, looked at or investigated further in the next month or so.
He's also in Disney World in a way out of fear, so he's on hold. Give me a break.
Bury was relegated by quite a distance, actually, a 9-point gap. So they're relegated to League Two. So again, maybe Aldred is now seen as a player that could play a part in them trying to move back up the leagues. There's certainly not much I could tell you about Bury, I must confess, but
I might be making this up, but have they not changed manager recently as well. I'm not sure. That might be utter nonsense.
Somebody did post that somewhere, aye.
I'm scrambling.
Aye, so I mean, if that's true, then you've got to imagine that perhaps, you know, any new manager would like to have a look at him over pre-season. I mean, who knows? I mean, he could end up back at Fir Park just on loan again until his contract runs out. It's one of those things. But because he's a loan player and he has to return to his parent club, I don't necessarily see him as, you know, on that list as such. I think what's happened is supposed to happen, and then we'll kind of see how it pans out over the summer.
I'm currently on buryfc.co.uk, and I can't really see much information in terms of what their plans are over the summer, including a squad update. But they have appointed Brian Jensen, the ex-Burnley goalkeeper, as their goalie coach, so things are looking good in that sense for them. Anyway, the other two loan players, Nadir Chichi and Stephen Hendry, whilst I know, great surprise that either will return to their parent clubs. Chichi, though, do you think the book's closed in that one, or do you think there could be mileage and a possible return for Nadir Chichi?
Well, to be honest with you, since the cup final, other than the stuff the club have put out, I've not really bothered to keep up with the rumour mill or whatever, but, you know, I did see a couple of people saying things like, well, they've heard this and they've heard that, and, you know, Chichi maybe be trying to, you know, negotiate a payoff, basically, and again, whether or not he actually enjoyed his time here, he's in it for the football, or, you know, if he's maybe, you don't get me wrong, he can still be in it for the football and get a better offer elsewhere. That's the thing. It's about whether or not he enjoyed his time here, whether or not he's maybe made a couple of pals, whether or not he likes guys like Stevie Roberts and Keith Lasley, you know, if he thinks that's the right move for him. If obviously, you know, he gets his payoff or whatever, then I don't think it's dead, to be honest with you. Even if he doesn't get a payoff, I can see him maybe coming back here on loan. Maybe, you know, Celtic will want us to pay a bigger cut of the wages this time, but, you know, as we're setting smallest budget in the league, as was constantly said recently, but I don't think Chichi's dead in the water as of yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, if he went elsewhere, if he did get released. You know, it's all right saying, you know, he enjoyed his time here, whatever, he's had problems elsewhere, but no, it's the same as me and you and MDL. You know, somebody offers you double your money, you're going to go. It's one of those things. And Stephen Hendry just didn't really work out, I suppose. You know, people were questioning him before his social media faux pas, and then after that, I think quite a lot of people didn't want anything to do with him. You know, I don't think he was terribly bad in the park. As I say, he made a stupid post on social media, but I don't think he was terrible in the park, and if it wasn't for that, if he did come back, I'd be thinking about, well, he could do a job, but I don't think we'll see him again.
Yeah, I guess with Hendry, Jay, a player that had got himself to a much higher level through his performance at Accies, his career appears to have stalled quite significantly, and it didn't really pick up any pace during his loan spell at Motherwell.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to, you know, I agree with Buster. I think he, you know, there's the odd game that, you know, he came on and did a bit of a job, you know, perhaps when we were looking for maybe a bit more defensive wing-back at times during games. And at times, that's what you need. You know, at times you'd maybe bring in a loan signing for a few months or for a season, just to kind of supplement the squad and give you that kind of backup that you don't necessarily have. So, you know, it's a player who came in, you know, was a part of the squad, did a job on occasion. But, I do think that, you know, I'd be very surprised to see him back. There's going to be better options out there. And you're right, you know, he's a player that we were all sort of familiar with when he was at Accies. You know, he's went down south and it's not quite worked out for him. But that happens, you know, there's an endless list of players that can happen to. It's just, you know, you give them that chance to come back up and perhaps show the form that originally got him those moves down south. And if he doesn't take that opportunity, then, you know, that's entirely on him. So, yeah, content to see him go. You know, there's no real ill feeling there. I know that some folk spat the dart me a wee bit about his social media exploits, but, you know, he can go back down south and try and build his career elsewhere.
That's That's it. I'll direct you to the chat here, because I've sent you. Bury have also been quite active over the couple of weeks of close season and recruited a new mascot, replacing existing mascot Robbie the Bobby, who is a dog that's a policeman. So they're getting a new mascot over the summer. So
is that where Bury
podcast? Yeah, you can have a wee look at him in the chat. He's 20 years he was in duty for, apparently. So over the summer, the consensus is that it won't be as busy a summer, certainly won't be as busy a summer as it was last year, where 18 new recruits arrived at Fir Park. You would have to imagine, though, there'll still be half a dozen or so new faces arrive. It's been a quiet couple of weeks, as Buster mentioned. There's not really been even much of a rumour mill so far. Is there any positions in particular, Buster, that you would like to see strengthened?
Well, I think everybody who goes to Fir Park knows we need something on the left-hand side. The thing is, Richard Tate's obviously filled in there and done very well as well, but I think a lot of people would like to see him back at the right-hand side, get a proper left wing-back, left full-back in there. The thing then with Chris Cadden is I don't think he's technical enough to be a centre midfielder, but see when he sort of plays in front of maybe Campbell and McHugh, and he's got a wee bit of that just barge his way through sort of thing about him. And don't mind, I love Chris Cadden. I think he's got a great player for us at times. But I don't know where that would leave him, to be fair, because, you know, you've then obviously got guys like Tanner and, you know, anybody else who's maybe coming in or whatever, who'll sit behind the forwards in that sort of role there. But I think, you know, we definitely need again, this is assuming we're going to go with the same formation. I know there's been chat that there's been talk of that we might not be as direct as we were next year. I don't know if I see that happening either, but if we're keeping the same sort of formation, similar sort of players, we need somebody who can play left back, left wing back. And if we're letting guys like the competition winner go, we're obviously going to need people to play up front as well. So, maybe another striker to challenge Ryan Bowman and Curtis Main. But again, you know, other than that, I'm not really too sure as what. Because again, we're saying it's not going to be as busy as summer. That all depends, obviously. If we need to replace our goalkeeper, if we need to replace one of our centre halves, if a bid comes in for Cadden, you know, stuff like that. So I think it could potentially be as busy as before. Maybe not 18 signings, but I mean, busy for the backroom staff having to do their work, Stevie Robinson having to go out and talk to players, you know, stuff like that. But I don't really know. Other than the left back there, it's there or thereabouts, isn't it?
Buster kind of touched on the subject there, Jay, but there will be interest from elsewhere, given how successful last season was in individual players. Chris Cadden currently on Scotland duty. What a way to finish his season after representing Motherwell in two cup finals and then earning international recognition with Scotland as well. Not only that, but actually getting on. It wasn't just a filler player in the squad, and we can get into the what's and what for's for this Scotland squad and the reasons behind the trip. But regardless of that, Chris Cadden is a Scotland internationalist, and again might get more game time in the early hours of this morning when we take on Mexico. Cedric Kiepre has had a phenomenal first season as a regular professional footballer. You've got Trevor Carson, who for all the will in the world looks like he'll be looking to move elsewhere. We've got real assets at this football club, and given the business model that we have in place, you would expect there will be at least one or two departures.
Well, yeah, I mean, the players you've mentioned, I think, you know, you could even maybe add somebody like Curtis Main in there, just based on the 6 months they had. Just, you know, at the end of the day, these are guys who are going to be on the radar of other clubs. You know, we go on about our own recruitment and our own scouting. You know, there will be many, many clubs who will be aware of those players. Now, they might not be You know, if they're looking for a centre-half, then Kipre might be fourth or fifth down the pecking order. So, but, you know, there's a lot of transfer activity happening over the summer, and suddenly when teams miss out of targets, you know, Kipre bumps up that list. So, you know, it's all kind of conjecture. You don't really know how it's going to pan out. We could start, we could, in all, you know, realistically, we could start the season with nobody leaving, just because, you know, that may happen. Well, teams may not meet our valuation. You know, Kipre might be happy to stay and develop. You know, there's a million reasons why we could start the season with the exact same squad as we've got at the moment, just with a few added names. But as you've both said, you know, there's every chance that we could start the season with possibly two, three, four players departing because clubs have came in and offered the kind of money we're looking for them. So it's difficult to kind of pinpoint. I think the only player that I think seems to be widely accepted is going to move on is Trevor Carlson. You know, that seems to be the chat all over social media and the forums and the pubs and things like that. I think everybody kind of recognises that he was, he stayed during the January transfer window when Celtic were after him. But I think most people probably are under the impression that he perhaps was told that, you know, we'll keep you now, but you're free to move on in the summer if someone comes in and bids for you. And he's obviously made his way into the first team for Northern Ireland. And, you know, as you said, Sparra, you know, being an international is such a massive thing these days. You know, football is no longer just about, you know, what somebody can do in the pitch for 90 minutes. It's all to do with, you know, what they've got in their CV. And being an international is a massive part of that. So, you know, if a team comes in and offers the kind of money that we were looking for Carlson, which I kind of expect they probably will. I know Cardiff have been heavily linked to him. Then we definitely need to be looking for a goalkeeper. But as Buster said earlier, I think elsewhere, I think it's maybe about supplementing the squad, about building up the squad. You know, we've got younger guys getting promoted to the first team squad this season, so it'll be interesting to see who can step up. But I tend to agree with Buster. I think a left-sided wing-back, is, if we are going to go with the back three, is vital. You know, I think Elliot Freer gets such a, you know, an undeserved hard time, but he is not a left wing-back. He's an out-and-out winger. And so his entire game is built on a starting point that isn't as far back as he's asked to play. So I do think we need a left wing back, and I think that's important. But elsewhere, you know, it's all just about kind of riding out the summer and seeing what happens. You know, we're talking about potentially needing another striker for Bowman and Main. That could be Chiefchi, depending on what happens there. You don't know how many of the young guys might step up. And as I've said, you don't know who's going to leave. So it's just one of those things. I suppose when you're a selling club like Motherwell, we can sit and say, oh, it's just about, you know, one or two areas. But as you've said, you know, it could be, you know, the complete opposite of that, depending on who comes with their wallets out.
And I've discussed the potential for Tom Aldred coming back. You just mentioned there the potential for Cedric Kipre perhaps being on the radar of other clubs, and will he want to leave the football club? Peter Hartley, who signed in the January window and hasn't kicked a ball since, he'll almost be like a new signing coming back in, because it's easy to forget how big a part of an early season success Peter Hartley was.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think one thing, you know, obviously Robinson, I think most Motherwell fans would accept he's done a good job, and I think most Motherwell fans would suggest the recruitment at the club last summer was very good. But I think, you know, two of the best signings we've potentially made this season came in January, when we lost two big parts of our squad. You know, we lost Peter Hartley and we lost Louis Moult, and yet we brought in Curtis Mayne and Tom Aldred. And, you know, you can debate all day about who's better, who's, you know, different players and things like that, but at the end of the day, to replace Hartley with Aldred and to replace Moult with Mayne has been fantastic. And I think if we hadn't done that, we certainly, I don't believe we would have had quite as successful a season as we've had. So that's been massive. And you're right, you know, Hartley was a big, big player for us. He was an important player at the back. And, you know, yes, it's disappointing Aldridge left. As I said earlier, I'm not sure whether he'll be gone for good. But, yeah, you essentially have someone to step in immediately. You don't need to be panic buying or going out and, you know, rushing about trying to get your first targets before they're snapped up for that position, because you have somebody who can step straight in there. We know what he can do, and he's a big part of our squad.
What we'll do is we'll finish up by briefly looking over the season as a whole. It started with the Betfred League Cup games, which I think were a massive scene setter for the season. winning all four games, three of them in great style. The Edinburgh City game, not so much, but four wins set us up nicely. We would then go on and lose the first two league games before hitting a nice run of form. Early games, busted win over Hearts in particular, felt like a bit of a turning point. The team went behind, battled back brilliantly, and that set us on a nice run that included victories over Ross County. We went to Hibs and came back from 2-0 down to draw 2-2, beat Aberdeen in the quarterfinals of the League Cup. So it was just getting that first league result that seemed to swing the season in our favour.
Yeah, again, I'm sorry, I'm pretty poorly prepared for the actual ins and outs of every, you know, individual game or whatever, but the first sort, as you say, from the League Cup group stage up until the end of November, it was phenomenal. I'm sure there was points where we were, you know, fourth, third league, you know, just coasting it basically. As you say, we got again a cup final. All right, there's one or two defeats here or there, some of them disappointing, but you know, we were on fire. I thought going really well. The league, as I say, we were doing really well. We were constantly third, fourth, fifth sort of area. And again, as I say, you got to the first of the cup finals that season, and then it's December. It sort of, you know, hurt the plan, so to speak. So again, the start was absolutely brilliant, and I don't think we could have asked for a better start, to be fair.
And yeah, I mentioned the Aberdeen quarterfinal. That was a night that will live long in the memory, and it obviously brought on the semi-final, an occasion where we come up against Rangers, certainly a beatable Rangers side, but how many times have we went toe-to-toe with Rangers on the big stage and just not turned up? And that day, I don't think we actually did turn up in the first half, to be perfectly honest, but battled our way into the game, and what a fantastic 45 minutes and the celebrations that followed that one.
Oh, aye. You know, you look back at the season, we're talking about being a cup team and how good the cups were, but it wasn't just, you know, I think it's easy to kind of forget that we weren't just, you know, scraping results against, you know, whoever, Stranraer, and then you know, Queen of the South or something like that. You know, we were being asked to dispose of Aberdeen, Rangers. You know, in the Scottish Cup we had Hearts, Aberdeen. You know, so I mean, we have had to knock out the big guns just to get the chance to play in the cup final. And that Rangers game was a perfect example. You know, don't get me wrong, I think it's also easy to forget that Rangers are absolutely dreadful this season. So it perhaps wasn't as big a scalp as it would have been in years gone past. But it was a dude. You know, I mean, the goal that Lou Molt scores to make it 2-0 to set, you know, the entire Rangers end flooding out, was just absolutely different class. You know, my goal of the season, I think Carol McHugh's won it against Hearts, but just the technique and what it meant, and that little bit of silence just as the ball hit the net, which I can only compare to the little bit of silence in Paris when Fadi's goal hit the net in 2007. You know, that's the only other time I've experienced that at a match, where there's that little moment of silence where everybody kind of looks at each other and goes, did that just happen? And then just chaos. I mean, you know, it was just fantastic, and it kind of sums up, you know, the team this season. You know, yes, things, you know, haven't been great in spells, as Buster says, but we've given some really, really memorable moments. We haven't just finished seventh and got to two cup finals, scraping results and things like that. There have been some truly, truly memorable moments that, you know, anybody who was there will remember for years and years to come, and that was certainly one of them.
The aftermath of the League Cup final, which obviously finished 2-0 for Celtic, was difficult. The midweek game, Celtic came to Fir Park and got what can only be described as a scandalous penalty to draw level in the late stages of the match. We would then go on and lose to Celtic, to Hearts, to Partick Thistle, Kilmarnock, drew against Dundee, lost to Rangers, and finished the year with a loss at home to Hamilton. A difficult run that really kind of, it got us worried, I suppose. The form early season had been completely evaporated by that poor run of results. Louis Moult leaves the club. you're really worried for what comes after that. But Stephen Robinson, as he did in the summer, he's able to find a few gems, Curtis Main being the key signing, I suppose, and the team again picked themselves up in January. There was the trip abroad as well that seemed to bring this squad closer together. In January and February, the results pick up, the league position picks up, and everything's rosy in the garden, I guess.
Well, yeah, it's, again, if you... I've now got them in front of me. If you look at January, December and January, sorry, we only had one win, and it was against Ross County. We got beat just about every game in December, as you mentioned, and then we had a couple of decent sort of draws, away to Hearts, for example. But you're right there. You say, you know, the whole sort of terrible run in December, and then we had the break where we, you know, it was a Tenerife, sorry, we said we went to. I can't mind where it was, sorry, but anyway, wherever they went, the squad did seem to come back as a bit refreshed, you know. And again, if you look at the rest of the season from there, there was quite a few draws in there, and probably just about as many wins as defeats. But you know, we've done plenty to obviously keep ourselves away from the relegation zone. Really, we're never really in any danger of that, and I think that's, again, considering the last couple of seasons, you know, Baron McGee coming back and us going in a decent run and finishing fifth or whatever it was, you know, we've constantly just been screaming around about relegation until the last couple of games. So it was good to, you know, have to basically deal with that at that point.
Jay, I've maybe been a wee bit clouded in my analysis of the start to the year, but clearly again the cup games providing that boost and perhaps putting, almost sugarcoating the league results when they are poor. A victory against Hamilton at Fir Park, then go to Dens Park and win. The late victory over Hearts was absolutely fantastic, but it was followed up by what I would consider as one of the worst performances of the season at Hamilton. Then you've got back-to-back games against Celtic and Rangers, where we remained undefeated, actually felt disappointed despite drawing against Celtic with 10 men. We squandered a 2-goal lead against Rangers with it really just been a 10-minute spell at the start of the second half that proved to be costly in that one. And then a defeat against Aberdeen in the midweek following that confirmed that we wouldn't be playing our football in the top six. There's a few results since the turn of the year that have possibly just secured the fact that we wouldn't be playing top six football. Again, I'll reference the Accies game at New Douglas Park. The Kilmarnock defeat at home, where Kilmarnock kind of out-motherled us, didn't they? They schooled us in how to win ugly. We drew it home to Partick Thistle. Just a few disappointing dropped points, the 2-0 lead against Rangers, that could have proved significant in finishing in the top six. But again, I would have to think that it's December that was the costly factor in missing out and finishing in the top half.
I think, you know, just saying there about the fact that, you know, it's a team that's been capable of giving us fantastic moments and fantastic memories, but, you know, it's a young team, and that's perhaps the reason why it's also a team that's been capable in the last season, despite how successful it may have been, has been capable of giving us absolute shitfest. You know, that Accies game that you mentioned is, you know, I think one of the very few games that I've came away from describing as unacceptable. You know, there's a level of performance you expect from your team, and that for me was just, you know, absolutely unacceptable. So it is a team that has been capable of giving really poor performances and getting poor results. But I think by and large that's to be expected from a young side. Have there been, you know, results that have cost us top six? Well, yeah, absolutely there have. That's how, you know, the league format works. You know, again, it's hindsight. It'd be wonderful to think what might have happened if we'd held on against Rangers, what might have happened had we turned up against Kilmarnock. But I think by and large you look at the season as a whole, I don't think I necessarily agree that the cup results sugarcoat anything. At the end of the day, your cups might not be deemed quite as important as your league campaign, It may not be the bread and butter of your league campaign, but it's still a part of the season as a whole, and you should still be looking to be successful in those. So I don't think the Cup sugarcoats anything. I think it just so happened that we were a bit more successful in the Cup than perhaps we were at content, you know, maybe maintaining consistency in the league. So yeah, there were some poor results in there, some results that perhaps should have went our way. You know, you mentioned the games against Rangers and Celtic there. But I think by and large, when you offset that against the season as a whole, the success of finishing seventh, the success of the cup runs, and as I said, you know, some of the fantastic results we had along the way, then I think the team, you know, for me, can be forgiven for some of those poor results.
And Bust, I suppose it's quite important to remember, we sat discussing this back in a podcast in July, and I don't think our expectations were much above finishing 8th, 9th in the table, and a cup run would be a nice bonus. So it is important to stress that we've achieved far more than certainly we expected to achieve at the start of the campaign.
Yeah, definitely. As you say, you know, you think back to, you know, this time last year, or, you know, a couple of months this time last year, whatever, even those threads on Steelman Online and Pie and Ball rolling, things like that, you know, and people are saying exactly that, you know, finish comfortably above the relegation and possibly put on a good cup run. So comfortably above relegation, easily achieved. You know, but as I said earlier, we were never really in any danger of being dragged into that, despite a couple of wee sort of, you know, flurries of results for other teams below us. But two cup runs like that, you know, as I said earlier, the only thing that could have went better is if we'd won the two things. So much better than MD would have expected, I suppose. But again, you know, there's still people unhappy the style of football that we play, or the fact that youngsters don't get a chance, which I think is utter bullshit, to be honest with you. And you know, it's just more than a bit generally everything, the fact that we don't have fucking Andres Iniesta in midfield, basically. So you're never going to please everybody, basically. But I think the season, and I think Jay said it earlier as well, the season's been pretty successful. The only way it could have been any better is if we'd actually won the two Bastard Cups.
Off the park, Jay, a massive season for the Well Society and the fan ownership model. Seasons where the fans are re-engaged with the club. The media work, I think, has played an absolutely massive role in that. Could only be good for the future of the football club and the sustainability of the fan ownership model itself.
Yeah, that's it. I think as far as, you know, the first season of fan ownership goes, I don't think you could expect it to get any better. You know, there's no exaggeration to say that the success that the club's having on and off the park is either directly or indirectly linked to fan ownership. That's without question. You know, without the money that the Well Society puts in, then there are certain players who simply wouldn't be at the club, or there are certain contract extensions that wouldn't have been given. That's just, you know, simply a fact. But then even things like, you know, the new ticketing system and stuff like that, if the owner was, you know, this mythical Peruvian or South American that was going to come over and turn the club into his own toy, would things like that be getting carried out? Probably not. You know, possibly, but probably not. So a lot of what goes on at the club day to day, if not all of it, is in some way linked to fan ownership and linked to those Motherwell fans who are putting in money on a monthly basis. And it's like anything like that. You know, the more money that the Well Society has to give to the club or to invest in the club, then the more success that we're going to have, perhaps the better calibre of player we'll be able to bring in, the more contract extensions we'll be able to hand out to our better players, and the more improvements can take place off the park. So, you know, with the first season out the way, you now have essentially what fan ownership is all about. You know, the fans can have the club they want. If the fans want to put their hand in their pocket and want to invest in the club, then they will see the rewards. You know, they will reap the rewards, they will see the improvements both on and off the park. If fans are quite happy not to invest in the Well Society, then you know, they'll get the team that maybe deserves. But no, as the society goes, you know, into obviously the second season of fan ownership, that first one's out of the way. Any doubts, you know, I think about whether we could compete on the park or whether it was sustainable, I think can be successfully eradicated now. You know, I was told on Twitter at one point that fan ownership, the minute fan ownership came in, we would be tumbling down the league. It was unsustainable, and we'd be in League Two within, you know, 4 or 5 years. I think last season, first full fan-owned season, highlights quite clearly how we are capable of putting out a competitive, successful side on the park, even with the finances, you know, that perhaps we have without an investor, you know, with that investor being the Welsh Society. So I think it's the only way is really up now. Hopefully that good feeling after the cup final will remain. As you said, the media team are doing great work, the club as a whole is doing great work, and everything's now interlinked. You know, the Welsh Society aren't that separate entity anymore, trying to, you know, get enough money to buy the club or to invest in the club and to reach targets. The Welsh Society now is the club. So if the club's doing well and there's a feel-good factor around everything, then that benefits the Welsh Society as well. So yeah, it's kind of onwards and upwards. You know, the more people who want to, on the back of last season's success, want to see more of that, and want to join the Welsh Society, or want to start pledging again, perhaps they're not pledging anymore, or want to increase their pledge, then you will see that, you know, whether it's on the park or off the park, then those benefits you'll see. So everything you see happening during the summer, the pitch, the players, you know, the ticketing system, it is all linked in some way to fan ownership. And you know, the members of the Welsh Society deserve a lot of credit for allowing that to happen.
Just on the back of that as well, obviously you say, you know, it's the Welsh Society's first full season. I mean, it's been going about for, what, a year or two before that as well. I was pretty, you know, cup half full about it as well. Don't get me wrong, I signed up and I was, you know, as soon as I could, right in behind it as well. But I was kind of dubious of it, basically, whether or not, you know, we would slide the leagues, whether or not it would result in this or that. But what I did see, around about the, I think it was just before the cup final, I seen a couple of tweets on Twitter of people who had basically said, I was, you know, I didn't believe this would work. I didn't, that's me just signed up. I'm now, you know, a full monthly pledge member, whatever. And I thought that was great because there was two or three people all just conversing, just basically saying the exact same thing. They thought it would be a lot of shite, and it's turned out to be, you know, pretty decent, basically. And, you know, turned them around. It's, whether it's a five or a month or whatever, you know, it's an extra wee bit for the club. So hopefully there's a lot more people who, on the back of two cup finals in one season, joined up as well. And as you say, it all goes towards the club in some way.
Yeah, on that note as well, the Exiles meeting the day before the cup final, it was great to get along and present Ali Maxwell with his award for being in the top 25 greatest post-war Motherwell players, and meeting many people that across the world that listen to us talking guff on a weekly basis. We very much appreciate that, and it was fantastic to meet so many people that from across the world that Motherwell Football Club means so much to them. So thanks again for that.
Can I just jump in there quickly just to say, on the Exiles Club, that's actually a very good example of the other thing about fan ownership. You know, fan ownership isn't just about, oh, give the club money or give the Welsh Society money and then, you know, they may be able to keep this player. It is about ideas. I mean, I hope Andy Patterson, who's obviously almost a regular guest on the podcast now, hopefully he doesn't mind me calling him out, but it was actually Andy who got in touch with me about the Exiles Club he used to run in the mid to late 90s, you know, in the infancy of the internet mailing lists and that kind of thing, trying to keep, you know, folk who weren't in the country updated in Motherwell, trying to bring them together. And he got in touch with me and we had a chat about it. I then, as a Welsh Society board member, I took it to the Welsh Society, and within weeks, you know, the Exiles Club was up and running. So, you know, for anybody who thinks that the Welsh Society is just this board who sit in a room and do their stuff, it's absolutely not. You know, ideas like that are happening all the time. It's not ideas that I necessarily have or that the Welsh Society board necessarily has. It can be any Motherwell fan can have an idea that they think will work either for the club or for the Welsh Society, can bring it to the Welsh Society, and if it's possible and if it's something that has merit in it, then it can come to fruition. So, you know, the Exiles Club itself wouldn't be existence if an ordinary, in inverted commas, Motherwell fan didn't approach the Welsh Society with it. And I think that's a good example of just how, you know, the fan ownership is supposed to work.
Oh, absolutely. And just a final one is, what I have learned over the course of this hour or so is that if you're trying to reference anything on the Motherwell website, it's going to take you about 5 minutes to make your point because you need the website to load up. So
I noticed that as well. I tried that. I know.
I'm very looking forward to the new website where it'll be able to handle more than me and Buster being on at the same time. Certainly can't do that.
Should have told me, mate, I'd have signed up. should have told me you were trying to sign on and I stopped.
Certainly isn't the quickest, that's for sure.
Guys, no issues like that on the Bury website.
No, the Bury website's a class above. Guys, I think that's all we've got for the 2017-18 season. We've got a couple of weeks to enjoy the World Cup and then we'll regroup. I'm sure football will be back sooner than we actually realise with the pre-season friendlies and then the Betfred Cup starting in the second week of July.
Hi. Yeah, no bother, I'm looking forward to it. As you say, a couple of weeks after we can kid on we're interested in Peru and Mexico and whoever else is playing there, but aye, it'll be a good laugh.
Well, it's been another good season and we do appreciate everyone that has taken the time to listen over the course of that. As we say, we'll be back next season. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Just don't.